the cringe again? Are we doubling? All right. I'm going to do what I didn't do at Fremantle and zoom in on my text. Make it a bit bigger. All right. So this morning we're continuing with our series. He's already put me off. Our series on generosity. And I've entitled this message, A Generous Posture. So just to recap, if you weren't here last week, I would encourage you to jump online and listen to the podcast, hear what Pastor Stephen had to say. It was really good, and it kind of sets the tone for today. So last week, Stephen introduced us to the idea of generosity that endures. And, you know, when he said that phrase reminded me that generosity is actually, it's a lifestyle. You know, it's a way we choose to live. And it can really, if you like, colour every aspect of our lives. And he walked us through the biblical principles of generosity as they're outlined in 2 Corinthians. Now, fun fact, that passage from 2 Corinthians 8 through to about the middle of chapter 9 is actually the longest continual passage on generosity and giving in the entire Bible. And from that, there were a few things that Stephen highlighted, but the ones that I wanted to just recap today, if you like, or remind us of, was firstly, Paul said very clearly there is a ministry of generosity. He encouraged the Corinthians to continue in or finish their ministry of generosity. I think that, for me, that really underscores the importance of giving. The second thing, as Stephen said, it was a very freeing message if you were listening, in that giving should be of your own free will. There's no arm twisting here. You don't have to give. We're not forcing anyone to give, but it's got to be something you do yourself, freely. You know, God loves a cheerful giver. And that to excel in our giving, we need to be good stewards of what we have. So all of our resources. And to that last point, Stephen provided us with lots of great practical tips about how to be good stewards, you know, how to plan with your money, budgeting, about being very deliberate about where you'll direct your resources to, and some cases where you won't. But if there was one thing that really stuck with me when he said it, it was that what the Apostle Paul was really communicating to the Corinthians was that giving is a spiritual stress test for the love that's in our hearts. Nothing will quite reveal, I guess, how much or how little love you have as your attitude towards giving to others. So now that we, thanks to Pastor Stephen, now that we understand the biblical mandate for giving, or for generosity to probably be more accurate, and how we can prepare ourselves to be able to be generous, what I'd like to look at this week is what does biblical generosity actually look like? And how we, through that, can adopt a posture of generosity in our lives. So let's start with a biblical definition of generosity. And this morning I want us to look at it from two perspectives. One, our attitude, and then secondly, our actions. I want to state up front that being generous is not just about your money, obviously. It's about your time, your wisdom, your compassion, your love, all of that. We can be generous and we should be generous with all of that. You know, and in fact, some people might actually find it to be easier to be generous with money than with their time or emotions because it requires, you know, less of an investment. Let's be honest, it's easier if you're walking past someone on the street who's got a sign up and is begging for money. It's easier to hand them a $20 than it is to stop and talk to them and listen to them and share and, you know, give them some company. But the truth is that for most of us, money is still the litmus test because it's a thing we cling to. It's a thing we hold on to because so much of our life seemingly depends on it. Sorry, it's my dad driving past, I think. But you know, the thing is, with regardless of whether we're talking about money or time or whatever, anything that you wish you had more of is something you should be generous with. Because if someone else, I guarantee you, someone else feels the same way right now. If you feel, I wish I had more money, that's a good thing to be generous with. If you wish someone would forgive you for something you've done, have a look at who you can forgive. If you wish you had someone to spend more time with, spend time with those people that also might be lonely. So let's look at a biblical definition of generosity in terms of an attitude. And for that, I'd like to start by using the scripture that Pastor Stephen led with last week, at least the first part of it. So 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 to 5. Now I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what God in his kindness has done through the churches in Macedonia. This is Paul writing to the Corinthians. They are being tested by many troubles, and they are very poor, but they are also filled with abundant joy, which is overflowed in rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more. And they did it of their own free will. They begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing in the gift for the believers in Jerusalem. They even did more than we had hoped, for their first action was to give themselves to the Lord and to us, just as God wanted them to do. So Paul wrote to the Corinthians about the giving that he'd witnessed from the churches in Macedonia. So they were giving to the Jews that were struggling through famine, as a result of things like famine. And he wrote to the Corinthians telling them about how the Macedonian church was giving. So what can we learn from that? There's a few things that jump out. Firstly, the Macedonian church was very poor. Said they were very poor and going through some hardship at the same time. Secondly, they were giving sacrificially, because it said they were giving more than they could afford. And finally, that they were giving of their own free will. So let's look at that. Firstly, they didn't let their circumstances affect their desire to give. Actually, not just their desire to give, but their actual giving. They weren't focused inwards. They were focused outwards. They were focused on God. They were focused on the needs of others. They weren't so caught up in their own circumstance that they said, well, I can't give. And verse 4 says, they begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing the gift. They begged for the privilege of giving. Can you honestly say that about yourself? Have you ever begged for the privilege of giving? Secondly, the generosity was sacrificial. In verse 3, it says, they gave far more than they could afford. In contemporary language, you might describe those sorts of people as, you would say, oh, that person would give you the shirt off their back. Like I said, it means that they were considering others at least as much, if not more, than themselves. Again, I think that's something that's lost in this modern society. And third and finally, their generosity is based on love. And said in verse 2 in the opening stanza, they were filled with abundant joy. Why? Goes on in verse 5, because their first action was to give themselves to the Lord. That's the key. That's their focus. They were giving themselves to the Lord. So how does that contrast with your attitude towards giving? I know mine probably needs a bit of a review after reading that. But one of the great things about biblical generosity is it's motivating, right? Paul wrote this to the Corinthians to motivate them to give more. Almost, you might even say he was trying to shame them into giving more, because they weren't struggling like the church of Macedonia was. And it should motivate us as well. Each of those three things that I just described apply equally to us today as it did to the churches in Corinth or Macedonia. We all go through hardships, you know, be they financial or emotional. We all have a choice to be more generous than what would seem right to the world. And we all have the free will to decide what we want to give as determined by what's in our hearts. That's the point that Stephen made quite clear last week. And the fact is that our acts of biblical generosity should motivate other people. Now, I know that the Bible very clearly says, Jesus actually said, you shouldn't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing when it comes to giving. But if I was to give to somebody or someone was to give to me and I told other people without mentioning their name that someone blessed me, someone helped me, it could inspire others in their giving. In fact, that actually did happen to me. When I first joined C3 in Sydney, many, many years, probably 20-something years ago now, I was younger, but it was just in the just around the time of the dot-com bubble when that burst, and a lot of people like myself who worked in IT were out of work for considerable periods of time. I couldn't get a job for about 6 months. Anyway, I decided to join the C3 church in Sydney, and I met a guy there named Tim Foote, who was one of the elders in the church. Lovely guy, and we ended up becoming great friends. But long before that, long before he knew me, he knew my situation. You know, when you join a church and people are like, oh, what's your name? What do you do? Between jobs, you know. And after a few months when I kept telling people I was still between jobs, I think they got the gist of what was going on. Now, I wasn't struggling for money. I was okay. I had savings. But I wasn't enjoying myself being out of work, but, you know, far from struggling. But one day Tim took myself and another guy from our church out to lunch, and really nice lunch, and we just caught up, we chatted, and at the end of it, he paid the bill, and then he handed me an envelope with a check for $1,000 in it. We'd only known each other probably a matter of weeks or a month. That inspired me, that continues to inspire me to this day, that one action that guy did has informed a lot of my views around generosity and giving. And in fact, I mentioned it to somebody else and it inspired them to do something similar. You know, I didn't run around and tell everybody who it was and not Tim gave me money. But I said that somebody in the church helped me, and it just inspired other people to do something similar. You know, Bono from U2 is renowned for his philanthropy, for his investing his time and his money in causes to help the poor and the needy and the environment and all of that. And he himself said he was inspired by Sir Bob Geldof, who started Live Aid and who has continued to devote his life to helping others, to helping particularly people in Africa. You know, and Bono said that Bob Geldof lit the fire in him. And, you know, if you listen to younger artists today that act in the same way as Bono, they often say that Bono lit the fire in them. You see, this is something passed down from generation to generation if you have the right attitude. So I said I wanted to look at the attitude of biblical giving, and now I want to look at the action of biblical giving. There's two scriptures I want to read from the Old Testament. The first is Proverbs 11, verse 24. It says, "Give freely and become more wealthy. Be stingy and lose everything." Let me read that again. "Give freely and become more wealthy. Be stingy and lose everything." And Psalm 112, verse 9 says, "They share freely and give generously to those in need. Their good deeds will be remembered forever. They will have influence and honor." So you probably picked up there was a word used in both those verses, freely. Give freely and become more wealthy. They share freely and give generously. Now, the Hebrew verb freely, as used in those two scriptures, is pronounced as the word pazor. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. but it means to scatter or to disperse. And it implies an excessiveness or a brashness in the way that you're distributing something. You're being quite lavish, I guess. And the funny thing is that in the Old Testament, it's mainly used in a very negative context. It's not used to talk about money. It's used mainly to talk about promiscuity. So it's kind of got that negative sense. You're being a bit too free and scattering yourself. But the point it's making is it's the opposite of a very considered or deliberate or conservative transfer of wealth from one person to another. So what's the implication for us if that's how we're meant to view generosity? There's a few things here. Firstly, the amount. As I said, the word pazur implies a brashness or excessiveness. So the amount should be shocking, eye-opening. Now, does that mean it has to be really big by comparison with other acts of generosity? I think the thing here is that not all generosity has to be large sums. You know, it can be a smaller amount, but perfectly timed to meet somebody's need. And the fact is, there's no right or wrong amount. There's no sort of, you don't sort of cross over from stingy to generosity with the addition of 10. There's no measurable point for this sort of thing. And the fact is that in God's eyes, greed and generosity is actually a matter of the heart. If your heart is full of grace and love, then the amount will take care of itself. The second thing that we can take from that is your attitude towards the gift once it's been given. So when you scatter something, you are literally letting it go. You know, farmers obviously want their seeds to bear fruit, but they don't really control the seed once it's hit the ground, once it's been scattered. They've kind of lost control over it. And while it's really okay to want to see your money used wisely by the recipient, the fact is you can't control it. I know a guy who runs a church in Sydney. It's an old Anglican church, and the building is beautiful. It's been there for about 100 years, and it's sandstone and has all these brass plaques around the place. You know, like the ones you might see on a park bench that says that this was donated by so-and-so. Anyway, so it's got all these beautiful plaques with the names of people that had contributed to the church over the years, you know, wardens or ministers or whatnot. And Paul, my friend who ran that church, was very outward focused. He really wanted to bring people in the community in. And there was an old lady who attended the morning service, and she came up to him and she said, "I want to give $5,000. Now, Paul naturally got very excited because he thought, "Oh, great, because, you know, we could run some outreach, we can do some advertising, we can do this, we could do that." But then she stopped him. She said, no, I just want you to get the plaques cleaned. And he said, "Could I use it for something else?" And she went, "Nope. If you're not going to clean the plaques, you're not getting the money." He cleaned them, you know. He was an honorable guy. He did it. But she was trying to control how her gift was being used, control how her generosity was being used. And I wouldn't suggest that we should be giving to organizations that are in any way unethical or doing anything illegal or something that you really fundamentally disagree with. I'm not saying that at all. But there's a big difference between giving your money... there's a big difference between caring about stewardship of the people you're giving your money to and trying to control it. Because if you're trying to control it, you probably really haven't let go of it. And the third thing from this is that, like I said, it's a lifestyle. This principle runs through the Bible. Look at Jesus, right? The real way to have power is to serve. The real way to have happiness is to put others first. Although he was rich, he became poor for our sake. And then finally, there's an implication for how you understand sowing and reaping. you can't really talk about generosity without probably addressing the prosperity doctrine. And I think all of us have been exposed to that at one point or another. And if you're not familiar with what that is, it's people, churches particularly, that will ask for your money and say, if you give, you will receive back financially. And that's a real twisting of Paul's words about sowing and reaping. And look, we all know people that have given and been blessed financially. That does happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. It definitely does happen, but it's not what Paul was trying to get at. He's not saying that if you give, you'll get richer. Because you see, the thing about sowing seeds is that when you throw a seed out, you get something else back. You don't get more seeds back. Farmer throws out a seed, he gets, I don't know, pumpkin or whatever. Don't really know much about agriculture. but you throw seeds out, you get something different back, something better back. If you sow money, you won't necessarily get money back. You'll get something, but you can't always be sure what it is. That's where we come back to that psalm. Their good deeds will be remembered forever. They will have influence and honor. So their generosity brought them influence and honor. It didn't bring them back, you know, more money. So the things that you'll sow will come back to you, but often there's something very different, something much better. So how do we adopt a generous posture? Again, I want to look at this through the lenses of attitude and action, but firstly, what does the world tell you to do with your resources? Think about it. We're told to hoard them, aren't we? Or to lavish them on ourselves because you've earned it. You've worked hard to get what you've got, right? Why not spoil yourself? And the world defines success in terms of what we accumulate, you know, be that possessions or accolades or experiences, but it's about what you've got. That's how you measure success. But the Bible challenges that definition on every level. And if we're truly following the example of Jesus, it's not about what we accumulate, it's about what we give. So I want to, like I said, I want to look at this again through the lens of attitude and action. So what's the attitude of a generous posture? If someone has an aggressive posture, we all know what that means, right? It means they're looking for ways to get what they want. But if you have a generous posture, it means you're looking for ways to give others what they need. Jesus had a generous posture. He sought people out to give them the things that he knew they needed, even if they didn't. You know, love, healing, salvation. And importantly, he didn't wait for people to come to him to express their needs. And that's just like my friend Tim in Sydney. I never said that I needed money, because I didn't. He just wanted to help. He just wanted to be generous. And as you know, I'll never forget what he said to me as he handed me that envelope. He was a very successful businessman, I should point out. But he said, God didn't bless me just so I could keep it all for myself. They were his exact words. I will never forget them. A generous posture, like my friend Tim, doesn't wait for someone to ask when it sees a need. It sees the need and it does something about it. It's very much being on the front foot. That's the attitude we've got to have. It's a bit like the Macedonians, right? They begged for the privilege of giving. So how do you action it? Well, the good news is if you think you're lacking in this area, if you don't think you have the right attitude, like so many aspects of the Christian walk, you can work on it. It's a habit you can develop, although it's got to come from the right place. So try looking at everything you have as a gift from God. Reject that idea that I've worked for it, I've earned it, it's mine. Everything you've got is a gift from God. And remind yourself that everyone you help is loved by God just as much as he loves you. I've only got one kid, thank goodness, but but you know, I can imagine that for parents that have more than one kid, like Donna and Janine and Justine over there and Tammy and Jeff, if you saw your kids, if you saw one of your kids do something lovely for the other one, imagine how that would make you feel. Right? You'd feel wonderful, be like, oh, isn't that beautiful to see? That's exactly how God feels when we do something for somebody else. So last week, Pastor Stephen spoke about the stewardship mandate. And he posed a really interesting question. Because he said, if you maybe think that you can't give, you can't afford to give, maybe you don't have a money problem. Maybe you've got a management problem. And there's easy ways to fix that. He talked about creating a budget that includes line items for giving, for being generous. To actually choose something that you want to give to and make a commitment to give to that, to see it through. You know, when he was saying that, I was sitting up at the sound desk at the time, but my first thought ran to a gentleman that was actually an acquaintance of my mum. And he passed away just at the end of last year at 92 years of age. His name was Chuck Feeney. Now, Chuck was an American businessman and philanthropist who made his fortune as the co-founder of the Duty Free Shoppers Group. Some of you may have seen those stores around the world. And he also founded Atlantic Philanthropies, which went on to become one of the largest private charitable foundations in the world. Chuck gave away his money in secret for many years, always choosing to be anonymous. And in his life, he donated more than $8 billion. The thing about Chuck, as my mum confirmed when I rang her this week to ask about him, she said he was known for his frugality. Despite his wealth, he only ever traveled in economy class, refused to fly business or first class, considered it a waste of money. He also didn't own a car or a house and was kind of known as a bit of a joke, I guess, but he wore a $10 Casio watch. No, seriously. In 2019, when he died, I should say, not 2019, that was last year, and when he died, he was living in a rented apartment in San Francisco, and he had about $2 million left out of $8 billion. He just wanted to give it all away. Now, it's very easy to say, well, that's okay. I mean, of course he can give away lots. He's got lots, right? But that's missing the point, isn't it? He decided to be generous. He put a plan in place to be generous. He transferred his wealth from something that he controlled, his company, into a charity that he didn't control, and then proceeded to give it all away. And that's good stewardship. I want to read from 2 Corinthians 9, verses 6 to 11. It says, remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. As it is written, they have freely scattered their gifts to the poor, their righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. Remember what I said earlier, in God's eyes, greed or generosity is a matter of the heart. It's not a dollar figure. Chuck Feeney translated that attitude into a plan that helped multitudes of people. And to me, that's a successful life. Lily, you want to come strum something for me? I'd do it, but I really am not that good. So how do you sum up biblical generosity? I made some notes about what I thought it was like. Let me read them to you. If you have a generous spirit, you'll be tolerant. You might need to repeatedly help someone with your money or your time while they recover from whatever difficulty they're facing, but you'll always handle it in a gentle manner. If you understand biblical generosity, you also won't make a big deal about it to them or anyone else. You'll be like Chuck and do it anonymously. If you're generous in the way the Bible commands, you won't keep track of what you've given to people, and you won't be offended if your gift isn't being used exactly the way you'd hope they would, and therefore stop giving. If you're generous, you are motivated by wanting to see people do well and to succeed. You won't delight in seeing people struggle. Rather, you'll be glad to have an opportunity to help. And if you're generous, as Stephen said last week, you will endure. Now, if that sounds familiar, it should. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4 to 7 is one of the most famous passages in the Bible. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable. It keeps no record of being wronged. It doesn't rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful and endures through every circumstance. I think you can pretty much interchange love and generosity if you're doing generosity right. And I think you could reread that scripture and just substitute those words. Generosity is patient and kind. Generosity is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable, and it keeps no record of being wronged or what it's given. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out and it can be of help to someone else. Generosity never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. There's a lot of similarity between love and generosity, because true generosity, biblical generosity, is actually rooted in love. God's generosity flows through us. We are the conduit for his love to others. We're also the conduit for his generosity to others, believers and non-believers alike. But we've got to be operating out of our love for Christ and for others if it's going to really hit the mark. So why don't we pray?